Hey Jason.
How are you doing?
I'm good, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Just trying to mess around with WordPress and Medium to move an old site across, which is a bit of a pain in the ass. I love this stuff because the frustrating thing is that they make out that it's all straightforward. So if you go in, I mean, Medium I like. I mean, I used to hate Medium because all you ever saw on there were open letters by egotistical assholes that nobody cared about your open letter type thing, you know.
And now you're one of them.
Yeah, now I'm one of them. Yeah. So I moved my blog over to it, and it's nice. I like it. I mean, it's a nice editor. I just like the way it works, you know, and the formatting and everything's really nice. So I'm playing around with the publication stuff, and there's a WordPress blog that I'm trying to import from. So they have the process. You go to WordPress, you do the export, and it says, what do you want to export? And you say everything or whatever, which includes media, apparently. It gives you an XML file, which I guess has URLs to the original images. And then you import it. It takes a while to go through these 400 posts or whatever they are. And then they all come up with no imagery. So it's like, well, how? Why? You know, there's no explanation of why this is. And then if you go to the import single story option, which is a feature in Medium if they don't support whatever you're, you know, importing from, you can type in the URL to a story and it comes over with imagery. So it's like one import method does images and one import method, which is your bulk one, doesn't. So what do? Do I have to go through every single damn story and import them manually? It's just a nightmare. I hate stuff like this. It's just a half-assed implementation of a feature that, you know, just appeases people to say, yeah, you can import stuff over, but doesn't actually solve the problem.
Yeah, I've not done anything like that for ages. I mean, all of my blogs are written just in pure Markdown, and then I use Jekyll, which is like a static generator. So my entire website is just pure HTML, no JavaScript, no PHP, nothing, just HTML. And it's great because then if I want to import it into anything else, just got Markdown. So piece of piss to import it into anything. Not that I think I'll ever change it.
So what is that in GitHub? Pages or something? Or you just hosted yourself?
No, it's hosted myself. It's just pure HTML. Okay. So I generate the page locally and then it's just in a GitHub repository and then it pushes it to my server. So yes, just pure HTML makes it ridiculously fast to load. So my website loads in something crazy like 0.1 seconds because there's like one image and there's no external stuff at all. It's fairly easy. I used to have an external font with Google, but then I even got rid of that when San Francisco came out because I could target San Francisco specifically in CSS.
I used to like that font, actually. I remember seeing your site and thinking I really like that font.
Yeah, it was some sort of Google font. I forget which one it is. Yeah, I think so. I think I got rid of it. Pretty sure I did. Pretty sure that I don't. I could be completely lying. Oh no, I'm completely lying. I still have it.
Yeah, I still have it. That's
a different
font.
Website.
I like
got rid of it. Oh yeah, it's my gaming website that I got rid of. Yeah, it's PT Sans Camp.
Right. Yeah, that is a nice.
It still loads
really quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. So do you do all your footer stuff? You know, your what do they call that? The stuff at the bottom. Footer.
Yeah.
No. Footnotes. Do you do all the footnotes manually then?
No, it's just Markdown feature.
Oh, is it? I didn't know that one. Okay. Yeah, how'd you do that?
I won't try and describe the syntax, but it's basically square bracket with a caret at the front. So if you Ben is really awesome, and then you could put open square bracket, caret, Ben, end square bracket, and then at the bottom of the page, just put the same thing again with a colon after it, and then type your footnote, and then it'll do it.
Yes, nice.
I think there's a Jekyll plugin that I use that automatically wraps the footnotes in like a special tag so that I can target them in CSS easily. But yeah, all of it's generated. I mean, there's quite a lot of changes. So if I post a new article, then obviously it does all of the pagination. So the HTML, there's literally a HTML page of like blog/page2. And so everything on that will have shifted by one article. And so every single page of that sort of 10 articles per page thing, they'll all change. All of the pagination changes. But, you know, just do it through Git. You just push it up. It's just pure HTML. No JavaScript.
Nice.
It's lovely.
Yeah.
I love it.
I do like Markdown. It's nice.
Hmm.
You can do it in
HTML as well, but just...
Yeah,
doing Markdown because it makes it just that much more portable, really. Because if you do it in HTML, HTML 6 comes along, and then it'll be like, ugh.
Yeah, I've been using Bear, the Bear app for Markdown stuff, and I have to do some blog posts for this accelerator work that I do. And they use WordPress for their site, which is basically, you know, it's, I mean, I don't think they've got a rich editor running because it doesn't work in my Safari, but it's basically plain text or you're doing HTML, which I hate doing. So the workflow I've got now works quite well because I was trying to, you know, do stuff in Markdown, then import it into WordPress, and it never comes across correctly. But the workflow I've got now works really well. So I write it in Bear, and then I've got a thing installed called Marked, which lets you preview from Bear in real time as Markdown. I don't know why they don't have a live preview anyway. But so you can open the window next door and then see how your Markdown, you know, see how the end result's looking when you're typing, which is quite nice. And then basically you just right click on the Marked preview and say copy HTML. You just go over to WordPress, paste it in, and say and do a preview, and it looks exactly the same. It looks perfect. It takes all the formatting, the code. If you've done the, you know, the three things to the three little characters to do the code, the apostrophes to do the code block, then that takes on the code block formatting on the AppC site, which has got the nice colored syntax and everything. So it just looks awesome, and I no longer have to go and sort of pick through the HTML of this file and add paragraph tags in because it's gone and bunched everything together or the spacing's wrong or something. It just works. It's really nice. So I do like Bear, and it, you know, it's nice on the iPad and iPhone and everything.
I just use Byword, which is just a Markdown text editor.
I used to use that.
Has a nice little preview. I use that a lot actually for my video game website, kyloben.com. You can for that one. I don't use Jekyll. I just have everything stored in the MySQL database and pull it out, but I still write it in Markdown. But every week I do like a roundup of news, and so when I'm reading articles I like to just copy the link and stick it in a Markdown document so that I have it, and then on the Monday I go through those and then write up the rest of the article. And so I have that on my phone, but I don't do anything other than chuck links into it on my phone because I can't be bothered typing. I hate typing on the phone. I hate typing on the iPad. I hate typing on iOS, to be honest. Unless I've got a keyboard, but I can't be fucked doing that. So generally I just do everything on the Mac, but it's nice having Byword because then it's all synced through iCloud and it copies it over and all the rest of it. So it's pretty nice.
Yeah, I mean, I like the, on the iPad, I like using the keyboard cover. The thing that's bothering me at the moment with iOS, with the phone, mainly because that's when I'm using the soft keyboard, is I don't know if it's because, I mean, I do switch between using the default iOS keyboard and then using something like the Google keyboard, you know, Gboard or whatever, or Swift key I sometimes play around with. I've never got the swiping, you know, the sort of swipe to right thing, I've never really got into. I've used it a couple of times when I'm walking the dog. But what frustrates me is how easy it is now. When the first iPhone came out, I remember that keyboard being much, much more tolerant of what you were typing, you know, because of the way they designed it, looking at the way of what words you were typing and what letters they thought you were pressing. So I made less mistakes. You know, I could type, especially when the autocorrect stuff kicked in. I can't remember what version that was, but I could just type, and I wouldn't have to worry about the fact that I just got the word "the" wrong, because as I did the space, I knew that it would correct it. So I could just, you know, type, and just turn brain off, ignore the spelling mistakes, don't get bothered by them. And 99 times out of 100, it would be corrected. But recently, I'm finding it's just not doing it. It's just not, you know, the Gboard ones are failing. Even the built-in keyboard, it's not picking up what
sounds
are...
Sounds like the problem's you.
Well, I mean, the thing is, they're obvious words. These aren't odd words. It's like the classic received. You know, I'm classic for spelling that wrong all the time. But, you know, these are known words. They're not weird characters or anything like that. They are known words in a dictionary. You would think that it would go, okay, I know what you meant there, and do the correct one. And then the best thing is, when you try and retype it, because you sort of backspace, and then start to retype it, it comes up in the autosuggest with the one you spelt wrong. And you're like, that's not helping me.
trying to learn.
Yeah, it's very frustrating.
I have all of that turned off, so I never see these problems. I don't have any autocorrect enabled on my phone because it's off too much. So
yeah,
it
and the
annoys
auto...
me when it corrects a word like three words back based on what you've written. And it's like, no. I know why.
And the auto...
To be honest, I use the dictation a lot now. The dictation's pretty good, especially if I'm doing like a Google search. Like I had to do a Google search on my iPad this morning, and it was for something in Zelda. It was like, I wanted to say something like Breath of the Wild, Shrine, Dragons, something like that. It was like quite a few words. I was like, I can't be bothered to type all of this. So I just pressed the button and go, Breath of the Wild, Dragon, blah, blah, blah. And it was good enough that when it searched it on Google, like Google corrected the little spelling mistake that was in it, and it knew what I was searching for. And that's been really good. I use that a lot more now. But I still don't really use it for messaging because I still like to see the message. So, like, I won't, if I've got my AirPods in and I get a text message, I won't dictate a message in reply through Siri. I'll just pick up my phone and type it. I don't trust it enough because there are some things that sound the same but are completely different. Like, if I put XX at the end of a message, I've done that before and it put literally EX space EX. And it's like, that's not what I meant. That's not what I meant. It's obvious. So I don't do that. And on the watch, I've used that little one where you draw, with your finger sometimes. I quite like that, especially for very short messages where you just have to reply. If the auto replies it gives you aren't good enough, you do that thing where you just like draw on the little touch screen. And I found that to be pretty good. It's pretty accurate.
Yeah,
So
it
I
is,
like
yeah.
that a lot. I use that quite often. But most of the time, if I'm searching for stuff, I use Siri all the time. I love using Siri for typing long, arbitrary queries.
Yeah, it works really well. And on the Apple TV and stuff, I like, searching for stuff like that.
Oh yeah,
Also,
the Apple
also
TV is
dictating your
great.
password and stuff is much easier. I know, that sounds completely crazy, but you're in your own home, so it doesn't matter. But
I can't do that.
dictating usernames and passwords and things, it's quite straightforward.
It would not be straightforward for 30 character long, all weird
Oh,
characters to use
Christ.
one password to do it all, which is nice because with Apple TV you get a notification on your phone to say that your keyboard field and would you like to, even if you don't have that Apple TV app installed, on your phone, put on the lock screen like a text field so you can type into it. So then I just copy and paste out of one password on my phone directly into that field and then it puts it into the Apple TV, which is a lot better than it used to be.
Cool.
Especially now you can set them up with Bluetooth so you don't even need to type in your first password. That was always a pain. But yes, it's pretty good. But I've always said that the Apple TV has the best implementation of Siri. I don't know what it is. I don't know whether it's where I'm using it's just much quieter, or whether the microphone is that much closer to my mouth because I'm, holding the remote right where it needs to be, or
Yeah.
it's got a better microphone, or it's got a smaller subset of queries that it's working with. But I've never had a problem with Siri on the Apple TV. It's always been 100% perfect. Even when asking for like really weird actors, like, is blah 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 in this film or whatever, I find it's really good.
Yeah,
I
it's
don't.
nice. I find it much more reliable than the built-in, than the phone Siri, especially. Well, the car, it has got better in the car. I mean, it has got better. But the Hey Siri thing sometimes. I'm just going to kick off in a minute. Here we go. I certainly did it on my phone, which is interesting. Didn't put on the other iPads or anything, which is good. But sometimes if you're saying it to your watch or whatever, then suddenly if the phone is mounted on the dashboard or something, then that will kick in. And it's like, okay, whatever. But it's got better. It used to be terrible in the car. And this is on speaker, I'm not using headphones or anything, obviously. So yeah, even with the noise of just driving, it's much more accurate, which is good. Yeah, I like it.
While I remember, because I will forget later on, but I was incorrect a few episodes back. We've discussed this number of times about the Apple Watch and specifically the Series 3 cellular. First of all, we discussed, is it going to get notifications from the iPhone? Like, if my Ring doorbell goes, will I get that notification if my phone isn't within range? So if I'm walking in a field somewhere without my phone, will I get that notification? Because there's no Ring Apple Watch app, so it's third-party iPhone app, will you get notification? And we thought, probably not. And then it came out, and I said, nope, that doesn't work. You don't get them. You only get notifications. So imagine my surprise when I was walking in a field last week, and then I got a notification saying there was someone at my front door, and I was like, oh, cool. And then I looked down, I didn't think about it, and then I was walking for a bit. I was like, shit, I don't have my phone with me. So it does forward notifications. I guess it probably depends on if your phone is connected to wireless or connected to something suitable, but, yeah, it does forward notifications exactly as if you had your phone with you. If you can't do anything, obviously on the Apple Watch, a ring notification, you can't do anything with it. It's just a dismiss. You can't view anything apart from the stupid fucking icons they've added,
I
which,
know. I mean,
oh,
there's
Jesus.
two things with that that's annoying. One is that they added that icon, which we were tweeting about, saying I now have to actually scroll to see. It's the classic thing of companies like Apple do this when they do their demos. When they did the demo with the Apple TV and said, "Look how easy it is to browse your 10 albums and four films." Try that with 800. Try it with 800 films when the kids want something that's in Z or something, and you've got to bloody scroll through because Siri doesn't let you play that yet. And it's the same with this. Ring obviously assume, even though they sell these multiple products, that you've got a doorbell. So there's only ever going to be one person or one action. It's at the door. No, I've got two cameras plus the door. So I used to be able to just look at the watch and it was like motion at the office, which usually means the dogs were in the garden and, you know, wandered past the office. Now I have to bloody scroll, which I know is, you know, first world problem. Oh no, I've got to use my finger to use the crown. But it's just an unnecessary thing to do.
It's annoying because you can't at a glance see what it is. Like, there's a very big difference to me as to whether there's someone at my front door or if there's someone at my garage. Because if there's someone at my garage, that means they're in my garden. Whereas if they're at my front door, it could be someone walking by. It's very, very big difference.
But the other thing is, have you seen the new thing on the notifications with the play button? So no. I'm looking at my watch now, a notification I got at 10:47. Which was someone at the back gate. So it's probably my wife coming back or something. And if I scroll, you know, if I scroll it up to see it says motion at the back gate, I've got the play symbol. The video play button is in the middle of the screen where the icon would be. And if I press it, the screen goes black, nothing happens. So I don't know what's going on with that app, but I mean, maybe they're testing something and it's like, you know, you can do a preview, which would be awesome because it'll be great to be able
it's
to play
really
it. And
what they need to do.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. And if you could answer it from the watch while you're out and about without the phone, that would be fantastic. But it's just very annoying that they don't think about these problems. You know, we don't need to see something. That the watch is a small screen. It's a glance product. You don't want to be interacting with it for 10, 20 seconds to find out what the notification was about. You want to just, you know, look at your wrist, see it, turn away, get on with what you're doing.
I think what's happened is that they've obviously not tried it on the watch because they don't have an Apple Watch app, so they're not thinking about it. Maybe they don't have Apple Watches, which is fair enough. Not everyone has an Apple Watch, so you know, it's fairly expensive, product still. Because they've added the little icons, which, you know, fair enough, on the iPhone lock screen. I don't like them because I think they look shit, and also they take up twice the height that the previous notifications did. But the problem is that they've only done it for the iPhone lock screen, so when you get it on the watch, it looks terrible because it's like a 20 by 20 pixel icon for the lock screen, but on your watch it's being shown at like 300 pixels because it shows it full screen, because it's meant to be used for things like thumbnails for like an album changing or something like that, or someone sent you a photo message. So it looks terrible because it's just this tiny little 20 pixel icon. I emailed them about it. I spent ages trying to find a support email address because they had nothing. I found one and I emailed them and I got nothing back. So not particularly impressive. But I'm hoping they're going to do the same thing that Canary did. Now, Canary is like a, you know, similar type of thing, video camera in your house. But for them, when you get a notification, the notification as of iOS 10, which added this photo attachment thing to it, showed you the photo of the thing that triggered the alert. So you could instantly look at your watch and I could see, or your phone, and I could see whether it was my wife coming home or it was someone breaking into my house. And that was great because I can just see it and I know. And at that point, it'd be fine on the watch because I don't need to scroll to see if it's the front door or the garage, because I can see clearly in the photo and then I'd know what the notification is about. Is there someone at my door? Is it someone just walking past? So I'm hoping this is kind of like a prelude to that coming, because this icon thing is just bullshit. It's terrible.
Yeah.
Coming up later on Men Complain About Things.
Well, talking about
grumpy middle-aged men.
I know, but I put something in the notes about the seen people going on about the bloody keyboard on the. It's this whole thing about with Apple. It's complaining about, you know, it's complaining about two iPhones. It's complaining about the iPhone 10. It's complaining about the notch. It's complaining about keyboards. It's like, you know, we live in this society at the moment, or this world, especially with Twitter, where, you know, people are acting as if they're forced to buy this stuff and forced to use this stuff and forced to put up with this stuff. There was literally a post that someone posted saying the new MacBook keyboard is ruining my life, which I just, you know, I read this stuff and I just think, I just don't understand. I don't understand why you're having to live with this. You know, Marco Armer was talking about, oh, it was, you know, in the next week or so, the warranties are going to be running out on keyboards, and it's going to be carnage and stuff. And it's like, no, it's not going to be carnage, Mark. It's honestly not. You know, it's just a keyboard, and you get a year's warranty. And actually, in Europe, you get sort of 2 years warranty in certain cases, and you can even get up to sort of 5 years warranty.
6 years if you buy online.
Yeah, 6 years. Exactly. So it's not as simple as saying it's a year. And if you've got Apple Care, you've got warranties or whatever. And, you know, actually, I've had situations with the watch. I think it was the first watch where it was out of its so-called warranty period, if you go by the year. And I sent it in for repair, and they sent me back a new watch. Just said, yeah, it was a fault, and we'll send you a new one. You know, it's not a big deal. You know, you don't have to live with this stuff and then force yourself to write big, long, stupid articles about how it's ruining your life and you can't live. You can't bear to get up every day because you can't, you know, deal with the movement of the keyboard or a piece of dust. It's like, Jesus Christ, buy an air duster or buy an air duster, return it to get replaced, or get a different keyboard or machine. It's not the end of the world. It's a device.
I don't understand it. I mean, I've got one. I've got one. It's fine. But obviously, that's no help to people who've got one and it isn't fine. And it is annoying if you've spent, you know, $2,000 on a laptop and then the fucking keyboard doesn't work. Of course, it's annoying. But it's not. Exactly. I don't know if it's ruining your life. If it's ruining your life that much, then you probably should have a different computer. If it's really that much of a deal breaker for you. That the keyboard's sticking. I mean, it would annoy me, but I would go and get it fixed.
Exactly. I would go, okay, I'm going to the Apple store in Basingstoke. I can show, you know, what is wrong with this keyboard. I can show the problem. I've tried to clean it. I would take it in and I would say, I want it repaired or replaced or whatever it's going to happen. And 9 times out of 10, that's going to happen because there's clearly a fault that could be proven. You know, I've had lesser situations where I've gone in with a phone and said something's going on with this phone and I can't, you know, I can't recreate it. I think it was the power button not working properly or something on an old iPhone 5, 6 or something. Hmm. And I couldn't recreate it all the time, but it was random enough that it bothered me. But I couldn't show the guy in the store. You know, it was very difficult to try and show him what the problem was. And it was like, we'll just swap it for another one. It's just like, great. You know, just it's like people want to, it's this thing about people want to wallow in it. They want to sit there and wallow in their own self-pity and then write blog posts. And complain about the world instead of actually doing something about it. It just does my head in. It really does. Anyway, I mean, I love complaining. I love complaining on Twitter. But I will complain about something. I will complain to Ring, or I will complain to what was the one I had recently? It was the tiles. I ordered some of those sport tiles because some of the tiles I've got on keys and things are running out, and you know you need to you can swap them over and replace them. And I wanted to try out those sport tiles. So. I ordered them through Amazon, as usual, because of Prime, and was promised next day, and then next day it was out for delivery and then never came. It was a Friday. And then for some reason, Amazon used to show, out for delivery. It was never out for delivery if it was late, do you know what I mean? Unless it was actually out for delivery. You know, technically, the status would change to something like it's been delayed or it's still in transit or whatever. But this basically was out for delivery and then just stayed out for delivery for a week. Being delivered today when clearly it wasn't. The status
that
was not telling
to me
the truth.
An awful lot lately. I don't know what's happened, but I've had that like two or three times recently.
But also because they're using Amazon Logistics, which have got better. You know, when they used to use DPD or UPS or whatever, you could just go to their site and see the actual tracking detail and see the actual status of it and know exactly what's going on, whether it's an exception or whatever. Now it's Amazon Logistics, so there's no tracking system because that is the tracking system. So I basically I did do the chat, and then you get the norm. I mean, my chats with Amazon now is almost like I know exactly what to expect. So it's just like, you know, you start the chat, and it's like you've already picked the order that it's related to, and so I say what the order is, and then I literally, before they start typing, I'm like, yes, this is Jason Neen. Yes, this is my address. Yes, I did the order. You know, yes, I've checked the status page. I just literally blitz all this stuff because they just waste 10 minutes asking you, so which order is it about? Well, I picked the order when we started the chat. What was the point of showing me that user interface if you're now going to ask me for the order details? It's like phoning the bank when you have to key in your details and then they ask you for your details again. It's like you've just wasted time. So I ended up getting passed around two different people, and then the second person literally went, so am I speaking to Jason Neen? I'm like, oh my God, yes, you are. Could you tell me the delivery address? It's the same delivery address in my account that all my orders go to. And could you tell me the order number? And I just went, end chat. And then I went back to Amazon orders and just did cancel order and got it cancelled. And then I did the little rant on Twitter, and then Ring said, contact us, and they gave me a 25% discount. So I got the retiles for 40% off, but then I got 25% on top of that, which was quite nice. So I've got a few coming, which is pretty good. So, you know, I like complaining. But I like complaining with some action about it. What I'm not going to do is do what a guy I used to work with, who I'm friends with on Facebook, and he's on Twitter as well. And sometimes I react to some of his posts because they're hilarious. But he's using a Mac, and all I see from him, it's like someone who's 80, like a grumpy old man, trying to use technology, whereas this guy's actually a developer. You know, he's a skilled guy. But all I see is constant posts about, oh, bloody hell, now my icon's messed up. Or now my menu bar's not working. Oh, Time Machine's failed. It's like, oh, my God, this guy. I said to him a few times, I really think you should, you know, pick a different career, use a different product. Because I've never seen anybody have as many problems with a machine as you. It's astonishing. I would do something else.
Yeah, it's just a general... People like to complain a lot, and people like to... I don't know, I feel that people like to share every single bit about their lives, even if it's, you know, fucking dull. Just constantly post everything. So if they get the sort of person that when something bad happens and they're like, oh great, I'm going to be able to milk this later.
Yeah.
And just they'll sit there and you'll reply to them saying, oh, that's terrible. They're like, I know, right? And they're just there constantly waiting for people to validate their existence by the fact that they've had a shitty experience with something. Yeah. And the world's full of shitty experiences. You just need to get through them, really.
I also love the people that, like when using like a development product like I use with Accelerator or Titanium, the classic thing I used to get with people when I meet them, JavaScript developers who want to do sort of the stuff I do. Oh yeah, you know, I use Titanium. Oh, I used that. I used that 7 years ago. I used that 2010. It was terrible. It's like, well
done.
Yeah, well, it was like 0.1 version that didn't really do native stuff. It did hybrid and only worked on iOS. And it's like the same thing. Oh, have you tried a Mac? Oh, I tried a Mac in the 90s. God, they were terrible. Okay, you know we've moved on.
My father-in-law, he likes to complain because he's a bitter old man. I love him, but it's just what I call him. And he rings me sometimes and he'll just be like, he just complains about Apple stuff. He just loves complaining about Apple stuff to me because he knows it annoys me and he knows that I might be able to explain it. So he'll read a bit about something on a tech site and then he will pass this knowledge on to me and then complain about it. So he did it a lot with when the new MacBooks were first announced with the Touch Bar. I went around to his house and he's just like, Apple just not, they just don't innovate anymore. And I was like, oh, Jesus. Oh, Jesus, here we go, Ben. Just keep
I love it. Those.
I can see my wife glaring at me like, don't say anything. I'm like, oh, God. He's like, yep, no innovation at all. I was like, the Touch Bar. I don't need a Touch Bar. Who wants a bar? It's just, you know, they need to make it so you can touch the screen. I'm like, oh, that's scary.
It's going to explode.
And then a few weeks later, I get a phone call from him. Which of these laptops should I get? Should I get the Touch Bar, the 2016 model, or the Touch Bar, the 2017 model? And I was like, what? Why are you buying one with the Touch Bar for? And he's like, exactly. They're on offer.
Yeah.
And then I went, when I saw him, I was like, how are you finding it? He's like, yeah, it's good. I was like, I thought you said Apple had no innovation anymore. He's like, they don't. I was like, why didn't you get a Windows computer? He's like, I'm not mad. And besides, then I wouldn't be able to complain about it to you.
I know, I do love that. I mean, I used to be very easily baited with this stuff on Twitter or whatever and then get into arguments or whatever, but now it's just...
I don't give a shit anymore.
I don't get involved with comments and articles. I don't get involved with... I don't get involved with stuff like that about Apple because I've got, you know, I'm not a shareholder. I don't care. I'm not interested. I like Apple products. Yes, I have issues with them and failures with them. My MacBook at the moment, now and again, when I restart it, unsleep it or whatever, you know, set up in the dock, just has restarted or has crashed because of some failure. And it's a pain in the ass. But I know what life used to be like using Windows machines. And I prefer my life not using Windows machines and prefer using it with a MacBook.
I'll start typing a comment because I read it and think, oh, what the hell about? And I start typing a comment and then I just go, nope, can't be bothered. I don't need to be doing this. And just get on with something else. To be honest, I've been off Twitter for pretty much almost a month now. I don't use it regularly at all. I literally just dip into it maybe once a day, probably even less, maybe once every 2 or 3 days. And then I scroll very quickly through it. And then I go, yep, not interested in that, not interested in that, not interested in that. Maybe reply to any mentions that I've got. And if I see anything particularly good, I might send a reply. But I very rarely post anything on there anymore. And I very rarely read it because it's just full of shit I don't care about most of the time.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it has got to that point where, you know, I don't believe at the moment that the typical, you know, Apple is doomed and Twitter is doomed type thing. I mean, I think Twitter is a machine now that has got momentum. However, they do need to do something about all the shit that's on there. I mean, it's, you know, there is a, Twitter could be good, you know, Twitter could be a good place and it could be a good thing to use and to promote yourself on and everything. But I don't think it's going to die, but I think unless they do something, there's just going to be this filter of more and more shit is going to be there. And I think what will end up happening is we'll end up turning on some of the options that we've got in the apps now to sort of, you know, you can turn off, I can't remember what they call it, quality tweets or whatever. So you can turn off.
I'm not even talking about like the more toxic stuff. I don't tend to see much of that. I'm just talking about just generally people's lives that I don't give a shit about. It's just more,
true. Yeah.
It's not even. Bad stuff. Like, I mean, I have a lot of filters, so I don't see anything with the word Trump in because I don't give a shit, and I don't.
Yeah.
I'm A, not interested in anyone supporting the man, and B, not anyone interested in anyone criticizing him either, because I just don't care. I find it very tedious and very boring, and it's a very emotive subject for a lot of people, which is fair enough because he's a fucking loon. But at the same time, I don't need it in my feed all the time. So if that word comes into a tweet, I never see it. And I have that with a load of stuff. Medium.com, that's one of them that I have in my Twitter block list.
Cool.
I've added an awful lot because of you, actually.
That's
one of my favourite ones that I've added, mainly due to you, is hey space at. So if you say,
okay,
hey at ring, why is your app shit? Then I don't see those anymore.
So you do the hey, you actually do the hey space
and the
word, and the at
hey
symbol.
Space at.
That's interesting.
Because if you're saying hey at someone, then I probably don't care.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, I think more recently with stuff like that, I've just done a direct at. I haven't done the dot or whatever. You know, it used to be the whole sort of way of trying to publicly shame these people by showing your followers. But it's like, I'm sure, like you, my followers don't give a shit about that stuff anyway. So I tend now to just do a direct at, and I still get a response. You know, you still get a response from them saying, you know, how can we help or whatever. So it's not the end of the world. You know, I don't bother with any of that stuff anymore. I mean,
my list of things that I've blocked, and I've got our mutual friend Luke Redpath's MP's name is blocked.
He's all. I love his little spats he has. He's always. It's very funny.
The phrase "yellow submarine" because Lego just kept tweeting about the yellow submarine Beatles thing, and I hate the Beatles. I was like, no, ice bucket, so I don't have to see all the ice bucket challenge shit.
Oh, that's
Kanye,
brilliant.
For some reason, I don't know. Anything to do with Game of Thrones, so I don't get spoilers. Follow Fridays, Eurovision, anything that has at YouTube, at Apple support, at EE, all these things. I've got loads of them.
I actually don't have that many. I think I've got one hashtag at the moment that I've done, but otherwise I probably need to do that a bit more. I've got loads of accounts that I've muted, and I'm sure loads of people have muted me, because it's always a good test when you sort of post something that you think someone else should respond to and then they don't, and you think, okay, they got me muted. I've muted quite a few people that rant on about Brexit. I'm not going to name names, but I've muted, I will name one. I've muted anything by Edward Snowden.
Oh, Jesus, yeah.
Because I don't follow him, but other people do, and they end up tweeting his shit, and I just can't stand.
I tell you what I do like, which is a feature I found a while back, is that you can disable retweets for people. So there are a few people I follow that I like what they post, but I don't like the things that they retweet, and you can disable the retweets for a specific person.
That's cool.
Which is it's quite nice.
Yeah, I mean, I think my biggest problem with, oh, that's cool. I've just seen I follow 70s sci-fi art, and it's just come up with an image from a book that I've got, which is quite cool. It's an old crashed spaceship. Anyway, I'll retweet that. And if you're following my retweets, you'll see it. I think my biggest issue with Twitter, just sort of culturally or whatever you call it, right now, is this sort of, is the way that you can get attacked. It's the way that you almost have to be careful what you say and how you respond to things. Because you could get jumped on and, you know, trolled and attacked and then vilified, you know, because you said something. It's almost like we're not allowed to make mistakes. You know, you're not allowed to, in reality, you can say something, you can offend someone and go, I'm really sorry I said that, you know, I didn't mean that, whatever. And it's like, okay, apology accepted, move on. But it's almost like if it was the real world, it would be like, you know, I've said something to offend you, and that person now goes out in the street and shouts and, you know, writes to their MP and writes to your boss. You know, your wife says, you know, does my bum look big in this? You say, it does, you know, and then she writes. and she writes to your boss, you know, she writes to your boss. Do you realize what he said? Do you realize what he's done? And then the boss tells everyone in the company. It's just like, that's just ridiculous. And that thing really annoys me. It also annoys me when there's double standards, where you'll get one type of person who says something and they've offended someone, and then they apologize, and then they just still get attacked, and then someone else who does it and apologizes, and people go, oh yeah, apology accepted, it's, oh, well done, you know, oh, you made me cry with your apology. It's like, holy shit, they're just, people are nut jobs on it. Twitter brings out the best and worst of society in showing how people can, yes, get behind something when some kid's got cancer and needs to, you know, really wants to receive some Halloween cards or Christmas cards, and suddenly they're completely inundated with sacks of cards and taken on trips, you know, like Bat Kid and stuff like that. I mean, it shows how cool stuff can be like that, but also how crap society is, and how we can respond to something by seeing one side of a story, and then everyone, remember that story in our, relevant in our industry, remember the guy with Dash, you know, in the App Store, was doing the, you know, the backstory was, or the original story was, he got banned from the App Store, he got banned from the iOS store.
Oh, for no, yeah, yeah, I remember,
you know, for no reason, he got banned from the iOS store, and that was it. And he puts a post up, and then everybody literally goes nuts on Apple. It's disgusting. It's disgraceful. You know, they're controlling the App Store. They're destroying developers' livelihoods. And people were just absolutely going crazy. And then you actually find out, hold on a minute, you know, there's got to be more to this. And then the story comes out that actually he used to have a load of dodgy apps years ago through another account, which he tried to palm off on his mum, and was paid for with the correct with the same credit card as this one. Apple found out this account existed and was linked. It had paid for reviews and things in there, all the stuff that's against their policy, and that's why they dropped him. And that's the real story. And it's like when the Sun or the Daily Mail go and post something that's not true on the front page, and then a week later do a retraction on page 43. In the bottom right corner, in a very small panel, saying, you know, last week we said something inaccurate, we apologize. You know, there's that sort of, you never,
yeah, there, it's exactly there, like
there
that.
Was, yeah, there wasn't any analysis afterwards of all the people that had jumped on Apple to go, actually, do you know what? Yeah, we got that wrong. You know, we got that wrong, and we shouldn't have, you know, reacted like that. It's just move on to the next thing that we can attack and destroy, and somebody's career that we can end. It's so weird. It's like, it almost feels like, I mean, you haven't got kids, so I guess you wouldn't know what I mean. But you know, when you see people out with kids, I mean, I guess you've got nieces and nephews of you or something.
How dare you, Jason? Think I'll empathize with you?
Yeah, but when you see like parents with their kids or whatever in public, and you know the kids misbehaving, and it's like, you know, don't do that, and telling them off or whatever. There's almost that fear of looking over your shoulder because someone's live streaming you or videoing you.
Oh, God, yeah, I can imagine that.
You know, this guy in the supermarket's having a go at his child. This is child cruelty. This is terrible. No, he's just telling his child off because the kid's spilling bloody
Snapple over him in the face because he's a tit.
Yeah, it's just, that's the world we live in now, where basically you could be live streamed at any moment, you know.
In many ways, we've gone back to, like, the sort of medieval time of like witch hunts and stuff,
when
everyone lived in a small village and everyone knew everyone and everyone knew everyone's business because you know, you were 30 people in a very small hamlet with no one else around you. And in many ways it's just that, but on a much, much larger scale, because everyone knows all of your business, watches all of it and criticizes it, and then will hound you in public until you change your ways. So it's there are definitely a large number of things that I think about tweeting and then don't, because I just know that I'll be inundated with shit. So I don't.
I hold my tongue an awful lot more than I would like to. And I've done the same thing. And I actually thought a while ago of making an app that was going to be very simple, because what it would do is it would pretend to be like a Twitter client. So it might even link up to Twitter and show you, you know, your streams or whatever. But not be a full-on client. It would just sort of show your home stream, you know, home timeline or whatever. But basically, it would let you could go in, and the idea was you could rant, but it would never be published. So you could actually hit the compose button. You could type in, like, I bloody hate this or I hate that. Hit the submit button. You would see it appear in the list, but it would never go and be published to Twitter or whatever. So it would just allow you to get it off your chest and make you think you posted it, but it actually wouldn't go.
Interesting.
Because I've done that loads of times where I've started typing, and then you just go and actually just cancel that, forget it.
I've long been thinking of... I can appreciate that. I've long been thinking of making an app called Echo Chamber, which would basically be the Twitter mute function, but in reverse. So you follow everyone you want, and then you put words, and a tweet has to have those words in it in order for it to show on your timeline.
Oh, that's cool.
I might follow, you know, 100 iOS developers, and if it doesn't have the word Apple or iOS or code or Swift in the text, then it won't show it to me because I'm not interested in their political views or what their grandma's cat's doing or whatever else. I should
Yeah, that's quite cool. I like that idea.
Should really do that.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be interesting next week because we're a week away from pre-order, so I wonder how much.
I have some news on that. I have some news on the pre-order. I have a friend who hopefully doesn't listen to this podcast, but he might do if he does. Hey. Who works for one of the major phone carriers in the country. And he said to me, "Ooh, going to be in trouble. Trouble on pre-order day, aren't they?" And I was like, "What?" And he's like, "Oh, about the amount of supply." And I was like, "Oh, yeah, I've heard a little bit about how little of them there are." And he's like, "Do you know the number?" And I was like, "No." And he's like, "Apparently, there are on launch day going to be 36,000 iPhone 10s in the country."
Wow.
So not many.
Wow. Okay. I've still got my alarm from the Friday pre-order for the 8. Every Friday, I have an alarm that goes off at like 1 minute to 8, and I'm like, every single time it goes off, it's like, what the hell's this? And then I think, oh, it's Friday. Yeah, still got that set from a month ago.
My reply to him was, "Huh, that's slightly more than I was expecting," and also I'm impressed that there's going to be any on launch day at all. I honestly thought that it would be a, you know, pre-order and they'll turn up, you know, 2 to 3 weeks later. But when I was in London this last weekend, and there are huge adverts for the iPhone 10 everywhere, like on the tube stations, big billboards everywhere, and they all had that date on. And the more I saw it, I thought they've really committed to this date, and these adverts have been placed recently, I'm guessing. So they must have some, but apparently there's not going to be many.
Well, there's only one thing wrong with that is that he said in the country. Which means when I order my iPhone 8, it doesn't come from in the country. It comes from somewhere else. You know, UPS deliver it, they deliver it from like Germany or it's Netherlands or somewhere it comes from. It doesn't come from the UK.
I don't know specifically. I might have been changing those words myself. The impression I got was that was how many there were going to be available for the UK market on the launch date.
Wow. Okay.
Whether or not that includes. That could just be for carriers, not just for the Apple Store. And you're right, it could be the online ones come from elsewhere. And to be honest, they probably don't know how many they've got yet because they're probably still reallocating them around. But the basis is that it's a very, very small number, bearing in mind how much demand there is going to be. I've always said that I expected the majority would go to America and China. And I honestly thought we wouldn't get it, you know, the week after anyway. But it sounds like we might get a few, but very, very few.
Well, the good thing is that there's still a lot of people out there that don't realize that the app is still the best way to do it. You know, so they're sitting there on the web page, and I've ordered through the app and then gone to the web page, and it's still down. And then like 2 minutes later, it comes up because obviously, well, not obviously, but the way DNS can work and you know, suppliers can work and broadband can work or whatever, that it can be delayed. But for some reason, the app gets priority.
There was
1 minute to wait, it just kicked in.
There's a report by, I think it was Wired, might have been BuzzFeed. Someone got to go with Angela Arendt on the day when the iPhone 8 was released, and they went to like their command center at like midnight to see it all happen and to follow it. And Angela Arendt even said, "Oh yeah, the app goes first." And I don't know if that, I think it's probably a technical reason why the app goes first. As you say, it's probably easier for them to flick that switch than it is for it to do it on the website for some reason due to caching or some nonsense. But the app always seems to be
several minutes first. Yeah, if they're both coming from some sort of back-end API type thing, then the API is getting triggered to go, you know, go live with the information, and then maybe the web is caching it or something.
The web must be cached somehow.
Yeah. Because the other thing I think I noticed this time was that I used to end up going into the app, you know, we'll be back soon, quit the app, go back into the app. I think this time I was just in the app. It said, "Come, well, you know, be back soon," and it suddenly popped up with the page. So it was like it was real time checking for the status.
Oh, interesting. I always just force quit it, reopen it.
That's what I do. Yeah, that's what I did. I'm pretty sure this time it did it. And as soon as it does, it's just like, bang, 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 get in there, go. In fact, this time what I did was, I think you can do it anyway, even though it's not available yet, is I favorited the models that I was going to get. So, you know, I went in before the pre-order date, and because I didn't want to just have to go through all the navigation again. So that's the trick I use now, is that you favorite that, so it goes into your status in the app, and then you just click the favorite and say buy and or add to cart. Nice. And it's done. So yeah, I'm hopefully getting two. But what I might do is do the old order one and then order another, so that I guarantee to get at least one.
Yeah, and that's sensible.
And then obviously I'll give that to my wife. Obviously, not. Yeah, that was the problem. That was the problem when I first bought the Apple Watches, because, you know, when I bought the phones before, I used to do that. I used to buy one, definitely got one. Buy another, definitely got the other. If I didn't get the second one, okay, it comes a bit later. Because I get the same phone for us both, when it comes, I take it. This time, obviously, I didn't get her one, and I got the plus size, which has worked out quite nicely, actually, and I'm sort of getting used to the size, which is funny, because in hopefully 3 weeks it'll be smaller. But when I did the watches, I couldn't do that, because she got the 38 and I got the 42. So when the first Apple Watches came, hers got shipped first. So it was like, damn it. So I couldn't do the old, oh yeah, my watch has come. It's like, yeah, watch has come. What size is it? 38. Oh, that's mine. Great. So she had her Apple Watch for about 4 days before me, and it was like, yeah, I don't really want to be. And she's sitting there tapping away and stuff, and I'm just, I think my strap arrived, and I had this. So I had the typical thing with Apple, where I had the strap for the watch, and I didn't have the watch, just like you do when you get the, you know, the pencil arrives before the iPad Pro or the case arrives or something. But yeah, it's gonna be interesting. There's two things. One will be interesting to see how quickly it sells out.
Very quickly. I'm gonna say within half an hour, I reckon it'll be.
Yeah. And the other thing will be how you know, will there be, and how big will there be, an influx of iPhone 8 orders for people who try to hold out and then find out actually it's not going to ship till, you know, December or January because you've missed the window, and so they go, bollocks, I'll just get an iPhone 8. Be interesting to see.
One of the other things that my friend said is that they had at the particular carrier, they have 100 times more iPhone 8s than they thought they would. Having a really hard trouble shifting them, apparently. They ordered like a load of them, and they're really disappointed that no one wants them. Or people do want them, but just nowhere near as many as they thought, so they've done some bad research or something, I'm not sure.
But this is the funny thing, because obviously, you know, we had all this build-up saying Apple are going to do this super expensive phone. No one's going to want to pay over $1,000 for a phone. Nobody's going to pay that. And it's like, well, it seems like many people do. Many people have
everyone wants that one.
Yeah, they are going to sell. If they can ship the damn things, they're going to sell a shitload of these things.
Yeah, it's going to be one of those, as many as they can sell type of thing, isn't it? As soon as they produce them, they're going to be, it's like AirPods, you know. If they can make them faster, they would sell more. I mean, they're literally just at full capacity manufacturing them. And as soon as it comes off the, it's not even going to like a distributor, it's coming off the warehouse and going straight out to someone that's already ordered it. So it's crazy. Actually, I went to the Apple store and picked up a pair of AirPods. They actually had them just in store because my wife had the Power Beats 3 and they were shit. They just kept disconnecting. She did a 13-mile run, like a half marathon, and she got into 3 miles and then it just disconnected and refused to connect again. So she had to run the remaining 10 miles with no music. It's like, oh, yeah. Jesus. It's like, I'll fix this. We'll go and get you some AirPods. But yeah, apparently that was terrible. But they seem to have solved all of those like issues now. They've caught up to supply and demand. I think it's still 1 to 2 weeks on the if you order them online. But a lot of stores actually have them in stock now, which is nice.
I guess the challenge they've got is, at what point does it? If they've got a limited number, which we're pretty sure they have, and if they sell out pretty much immediately, which we're pretty sure they're going to be, what is that figure going to be? You know, with it being November ship date, what, November 4th, is it? November 4th, you've got December coming up. Can you get more in stock before, you know, in the coming weeks to be able to make Christmas? If not, what is the window that is a reasonable period that people will not go, I might as well wait for the next phone, you know? Mm. Because if you go to January, I'd say worst case, you know, if January is the worst case to be able to get an iPhone 10, then that's not the end of the world. You know, I would be pissed to have to wait another 2 months, but I mean, you know, first world problems and all that, it's not the end of the world.
I'd be annoyed.
but if it got to like March or April, I would probably still get one, yes. But I think a lot of people would go, I'm not going to, because if I buy this in March or April, then in a few months, you know, in less than 6 months, there's going to be another one, hopefully. I guess it's that window. It's that, what's a reasonable period of time? I would say they've got to basically be able to ramp up to be able to meet all orders for January and get the backlog sorted otherwise.
I think people will want them before Christmas. I think if it's not before Christmas, they're going to be... I guess the real problem is that they're spending so much time sticking FM radios in them, so it's going to take even longer.
Jesus Christ. Please enable your FM radios. We don't have them. Oh, okay. Can you enable them?
No, they've
them
come
anyway?
Back again. They came back yesterday and they're like, can you put them in then?
Yes, I know. It's just unbelievable. What was the article said? The article that was posted was you had them in the Nano. You know, you had them in the old Nano. So why can't you do them in this? It's like, well, they're not in this. You know, it's like, please bring back the headphone jack. We want to step backwards. Jesus.
Yeah, I want 3.5 mil jack and I want an FM radio. That's what I want in my modern smart device.
I've ordered a... I ordered a Pixel 2 for testing and all that, and I want to try out the new VR stuff with it. So I went for the Pixel 2 XL because it's a bigger screen, it's got higher density, so it'll look less shit in the daydream view than the old Pixel did. The Pixel wasn't bad, but it did mess with your eyes because the screen door effect of the Pixels just wasn't very nice. And, you know, they can't really get around that without making ridiculously small Pixels. So I ordered the XL because it's slightly bigger and it's got more dense pixels to try out. And I bought the new version of the Daydream View, which has a wider field of view. So the old one, if you've ever looked at it or tried it, when you looked through, you had a very binocular style view of VR. So it was almost like you were looking through little binoculars with very little magnification. You didn't you felt that you were immersed a little bit, but it wasn't as good as it could be. And the new ones have got a wider field of view apparently. So I've got that coming. And obviously, the interesting things about that is, you know, it's got a camera bump now and it's got no headphone jack. And when the first Pixel came out, they were like, you know, we've got a headphone jack and all this stuff. And it's just funny
they did,
Yeah, they made a big deal of it, that they've got, you know, the courage and they've got a headphone jack. And then it's like, yeah. And it's the old thing. It's like, yeah, don't, we've got that now. It's a bit like me with Medium. You know, Medium's full of tossers and there's a load of shit. Oh, you're on Medium now. Yeah. But you know, don't talk about my previous comments.
It was The Verge that was the funniest with it, because The Verge, when the headphone jack wasn't there, famously were the ones that were like, ah, la, 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 la. Like, I think it was something like the iPhone 7 review had 18 mentions of the headphone jack. Like the majority of the review was about that being removed. And now The Verge has a post about the Pixel 2, and like it's literally like, oh, we can't even be bothered to talk about the headphone jack. We're completely done with that conversation.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, okay.
But there are still people that go, oh, it's just so annoying that they don't supply a converter or they don't supply this and it's that. And it's like, people, do you not understand? Do you not understand what the purpose of removing the headphone jack was? It was because it's old technology and they want to move to wireless. So why they gave you a damn converter to shut you up, because they wanted to make sure your existing ear pods would work with it. Yeah. But moving forward, that's not what they want to give you. That's not what they want to do. They want to move away from it.
We got a dongle with the iPhone 8 as well, didn't we?
Yes.
I was surprised. I didn't think it would. I wouldn't.
No, exactly. Exactly. And it's this whole thing with you know, what they should supply and what they provide and moving forward. It's like people going on about Donglegate, okay? So when I bought the new MacBook Pro, yes, it was the most expensive one I bought. I mean, I think typically I would spend around $2,400, including VAT, and that would get me the top-of-the-range MacBook Pro 13. I think this one ended up costing me nearly $2,700 or whatever because of all the crap that I had to buy with it, some of the, you know, dongles and stuff. But once you've got the stuff, once you've sorted it, and you've identified that you need this little, I've got one of these hyperdrive things that plugs in and gives me my SD card slot if I need it. And I'm looking at it now. It gives me two USB-As and it gives me two USB-Cs and it gives me an HDMI out for presentations. That's my dongle. That's all I need. So I don't get these people who love to do these posts. And again, it's the whole complaining culture of, oh God, my MacBook Pro, look at my dongle bag I have to carry with all my dongles. You know, you're a moron. If you're having to carry that bag with all of that crap,
you should have bought that laptop.
Yeah, you have not bought that laptop. You know, oh, it's not a pro machine. Go and buy a damn pro machine. Go and buy a bloody Alienware laptop or whatever, you know, that lets you unplug things and plug things in and it looks the size of a house. Go and buy one of those. But you've failed to optimize your portability if you have not worked out what ports you need, especially when most of these people who are writing this stuff are A, technical writers, and then B, do podcasting and stuff like that, and do video presentations or whatever, video YouTube and stuff. You know what you need. You know if you need a USB, get a dongle that has USB. Get one that has pass through for USB-C. Get one that has HDMI. This thing's tiny. I mean, it's a small thing. It's got two USB-C ports, so that's why it's got the pass through. So you literally plug it into both ports on one side, and it does everything that you need. So I don't. Again, it goes back to that culture of people wanting to complain about stuff. They want to moan about their USB-C. They bought the cheapest MacBook Pro and then complained they've got two USB-C slots. And it's like, oh my God, you know, you're failing.
Did the Pixel 2 come with a headphone adapter?
I don't think so. But I'll.
Do you know how much it costs if you want to buy one from them? A Google-made adapter.
I think it was about $40, wasn't it? Or something stupid.
It's 20, but still. Oh, is it? Okay. One's 9 and you get it for free.
Yeah, exactly. And again, it's like, I mean, I did that classic thing. I did do it when I went to Zurich. I went to Zurich last year and I'd had the iPhone 7 and I made the classic mistake and I left my adapter and I only brought my AirPods. I didn't have AirPods. And I only had my EarPods and I'd only brought the normal headphone one. I didn't bring the Lightning one. So I made that classic mistake. And so it was like, oh no, I can't use my headphones. Oh, wait, I can go to the Apple store and pay £9. And yes, I can. It's like, it's easy. Just solve it, you know, and then stick that one in my travel bag. So now I've always got, you know, the converter or whatever. Problem solved. You know, I don't have to worry about, oh my God, I've got to carry my AirPods and my EarPods and my Lightning EarPods and my adapter for my old EarPods. And no, you don't need to do all that. Just, you know, work out what you need, optimize, buy two of something, stick one in your bag, stick one in your desk, you're done. It's not the end of the world.
The thing that annoys me is I'm going to Sweden in about 4 hours, and I'm going to take my Nintendo Switch with me, which I'll play on the flight. And it's really annoying because I've packed really super light. I've just got a few clothes, I've got my laptop, I've got my Switch, my AirPods, and then I was like, the Nintendo Switch doesn't support Bluetooth headphones. Now I need to pack. I don't have one of those. I keep meaning to buy like one of those little Bluetooth headphone adapter thing, so you plug it into the 3.5mm and it gives you Bluetooth. But I just haven't, and I didn't have time to order it, because I know that if I ordered it yesterday, Amazon would deliver it, you know, 10 minutes after I leave. So I was like, so now I have to pack my massive Beats headphones, because they're the only ones I've got that have got a 3.5mm cord on them, which is the optional one, because they're Bluetooth headphones, but you know, they come with the 3.5mm cable that you can plug in as well. So now I've got to take these massive bloody headphones with me. Oh, so annoying. Why doesn't the Switch support Bluetooth headphones? Very frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah, so that still has the classic headphone jack. Why doesn't it... Has it got Bluetooth in it? Is it just not turned on? Or is it?
Well, no, it does have... It must have Bluetooth or some form of Bluetooth, because it's got the controllers, the detachable controllers. It's got its own controllers. I don't know if they use some proprietary thing, but I think they are just... But no, they are just standard Bluetooth, because you can get the Joy-Cons to a Mac. So now I think it's more a case of power. In terms of battery life. If they used Bluetooth for the battery, it might drain it for the audio. But also just the CPU overhead. I mean, it's pretty constrained as it is. Because, it's just a cheap Android tablet, really. That's all the Switch is. It's a cheap Android tablet with a nice Nintendo coating of UI.
Right.
But at its heart, I mean, it's like a Tegra X1 or something. It's very, very low powered. It's got a proper spinning fan in it. I think I mentioned this before when it came out. And it's hilarious. You turn it on, you just hear this noise. You can feel hot air blowing out the top. It's like, what the fuck is this? It's so crazy. but yeah, it's not wanting for space. I mean, they're not constrained by the headphone jack. It's a little brick, so it's not going to be slimming it down anytime soon. So they're not worried about that. But yeah, I think it must be... I mean, you can't even do like voice chat on it. You have to use an app for the voice chat, because to have the overhead of doing all of that stuff because they're using the CPU to its max, I imagine, most of the time. It's very frustrating though. It's so annoying. But
It's the whole thing about you. It's like it's the mini USB. It's micro USB. It's USB-C. I was just trying to look around yesterday for a USB-C to USB or some means to charge the Pixel that I've got. Because that's USB-C, and then it's like every bloody cable I've got is all either mini USB or micro USB, whatever it's called, or Lightning. Yeah. So it's trying to find one. Managed to track one down.
I used to have that problem. It's got a lot better now. A, with the wireless charging on the iPhone 8, it's nice. I mean, obviously, don't have the
USB-C that is problem nice
there anyway. But because I have the 12-inch MacBook, which I gave to my wife, and now I've got the MacBook Pro, that means we have two USB-C chargers in the house now. So quite often, if I need a USB-C one, it's a bit easier to find one now that we've got two devices that use it. And then as we add more, so the Switch charges via USB-C, so I've got a Switch USB charger, and then that has a little USB cable coming out of the dock to charge the joypad as well, so that means I've got four little chargers around the place. So it's slowly getting more and more USB-C cables around the place. It's like you're saying, it's not difficult to go buy a cable, and it's a standard, so it's, you know, very cheap as well. Like the same with the wireless charging, which I think we've mentioned last time, is you can just buy like a 10 quid charger. You don't need to buy a 60 quid Belkin one because it's nice open standard. But you know, people like to complain about this shit because Apple got rid of, you know, whatever port, and now they've got USB-C. Oh, now it's terrible because I don't have any USB-C devices. All I had was these ones. And then the same people were probably going, they should get rid of Lightning on the phone, put USB-C in it.
Well, exactly. Yeah, and the fact that, you know, you'll get these posts with the photos, the sort of sarcastic posts that will be like, oh, you know, I bought my new MacBook Pro 13 and I've got my new iPhone 8 and oh no, I can't charge it from the MacBook Pro because the cable that comes with it is USB-A. It's like, oh, for God's sake, you know, they've shipped that thing with a, you know, a brick that it fits, and they've got their reasons for shipping that thing because, you know, the new MacBook Pro is new, and the likelihood is that most people are going to still have, you know, compatible tech with a USB-A. But who cares? You can charge it from the damn wall. You don't have to plug it into your phone. You know, Xcode 9, if you're a developer, has got the wireless stuff now, so you don't have to be connected. Nice. And worst case scenario is you just buy a bloody cable. It's not the end of the world. You know, it's solvable. The time it took you to go and arrange that photo and put the two mosaic of those two photos together and write a snarky comment and post it on Twitter, you could have just ordered a bloody cable. But you know, obviously you don't get likes and retweets for being sensible.
I had a great experience the other day, because now it's got the wireless charging. Obviously I've got a wireless charger at home, that's the only one I've got, and I plug it in with a cable sometimes if I'm doing other bits and pieces or in the car. But I went to McDonald's and I went in, and then they have like the air power things on the tables, and I've always seen them before, and you can lift it up and they have like a cable that pulls out, so you can like plug it in via Lightning. But I never bother because I don't need the charge, to be honest. It's just I notice it and go, oh, that's cool how they've put these things in. And I saw some like teenage girls trying to work out which cable worked into their phone when they were trying to get it working, because they were like putting their phones on it and it wasn't doing anything, because obviously they didn't have wireless charging phones, they had normal ones. So I'd sort of seen them before, and I sat down and then I saw it and I was like, oh wait, I can use this now. And I just literally just put my phone on top of it and it just started charging. I was like, oh, that is nice, I like that. So yeah, it's pretty cool to finally be able to use that kind of tech. And that's like one of the things, like, it's nice that they support these open standards in a lot of ways. I mean, in a lot of ways they don't, like with Lightning, but where it makes sense, they've embrace things like the key standard, which is nice. I really like
exactly
that. I didn't need to do it because I had 94% battery, because I had it plugged in the car for CarPlay.
Yeah,
but it's just nice that you can do it if you want to.
Yeah, and what will happen is, you know, I think I mentioned this before, we bought some of those little slither pad things that you can put behind your case if you've got a case, or stick it on the back of the phone, and it gives you the key charging. But it's, you know, it's a hack and it's horrid. And eventually I got pissed off with it, because if you wanted to charge with Lightning, you have to keep unplugging the damn thing. But I've still got some of these cheap key chargers that I bought, which, of course, you know, I can set up again now at various places around the house, because they'll be usable again, hopefully, when I get one for her, for my wife. But yeah, I mean, I think what will happen now is exactly what was predicted when it all happened, which is, you know, the complaints about, oh, Android have had this for years, and you know, other phones have had key charging for years. Well, what will happen now, guaranteed, with the iPhone 8 and with the iPhone 10 and with Apple taking on the standard, is we'll see way more peripherals being created. Not only chargers, but I would imagine, you know, there'll be desks, or there'll be, you know, some sort of like mouse pads or desks or whatever that have little panels in them, you know, built into. I could imagine seeing like a range of desks from IKEA.
IKEA already like, do. They have done for years.
Oh, do they?
Oh, well, they have done for charger. At least a year. They've got key chargers built into their desks.
Well, that's quite nice. But yeah, we'll definitely see more of it, you know, being taken up, because that's what Apple seem to be able to do. They do this stuff, and then, yes, they may have, you know, recreated something that was already done by someone else, but do it in a more consumer-friendly way, and all of a sudden, you know, there's a lot more demand for it, and so people start implementing it. But yeah, it's very nice. It's just nice to be. It's nice to not fumble around with cables, and it sounds really silly, but it's just, yeah, it's just nice. I can just put it on my desk, put it on the little pad on the desk, and it's slow. You know, it's not as fast as a lightning cable, but, you know,
well,
if I want to.
I was reading the other day saying it is the same. That it, actually, someone did some tests. Everyone was complaining about the USB-C charger and how if you charge the iPhone with a USB-C charger, then it charges like twice as fast. And so why doesn't Apple include a USB-C charger, or, you know, 12-watt charger, or whatever the size is supposed to be? Why do they keep giving you a shitty 5-watt charge? And the key thing charges at 5 watts as well. So it should, theoretically, charge the same as the charger in the box, or certainly within like a few minutes of it. But if you are charging from an iPad charger, like a 10-watt one or a 12-watt one, or using a USB-C one, then it will obviously charge a lot faster.
Yeah, that's the ones I'm either charging from those, or I've got one on my desk that's like some anchor thing with about 10 ports, and it's like 65 watt.
I think I've said it many times before, but I don't ever need to charge my phone, but that's just the joy of working from home and not going out at all. So And when I do go out, I normally have to go in the car to get anywhere first. And the car, I always have the phone plugged in because I use it for CarPlay. So my phone, I never ever run out of battery. Even when I was out and about in London the weekend, battery just never went below 50%. I don't really use my phone that much. Although I had a really great experience. I decided on the Saturday when I got the site, you know what, I don't need my phone. I don't need it with me. I'm not going to be taking photos of anything because I need to. I don't need to look anything up. I don't need it on me all the time. I'm going to leave it at the hotel and just go out of my app, just walking around London. That's when I got the Ring notification, now I think about it. And so I was just walking around Covent Garden and that with just my watch, nothing in my pockets. Didn't take my wallet with me because I knew I could Apple Pay anywhere I needed to. And it was great. It felt so nice. And I didn't get any. I think I got a couple text messages, which I could just reply to on my watch if I wanted to, but I don't think I bothered. I could see a few emails, but apart from that, didn't need it with me all the time, and it was really nice, actually.
Yeah, it's interesting how, I mean, they've obviously done the watch update, which has made, I've found the switching is a lot quicker in terms of how it switches to cellular. But there's been a couple of situations where I've got to sort of rush out at 12 to pick up my daughter from nursery. And plenty of times I've sort of taken my phone to the front door and put it on like the piano thing at the front door. And then forgot and just got in the car, and then you sort of drive off and realize actually, you know, I've still got connectivity. And the call quality is good, and you can text message and you can do emails, and it is one of those weird things that I remember thinking, you know, when they were talking about, or when there were rumors of cellular, I'm thinking, God, I can't see the reason for having cellular.
We've always said it's completely pointless.
Yeah,
why would we need
this? Because I've got my phone with me all the time.
Now we're converts.
Exactly. And now it's like that whole issue is, because there's been plenty of situations where, okay, I've only been going down the road to pick up my daughter or to go to the shops. But still, you know, there's still that, it's that weirdness of whenever you didn't have your phone and you weren't connected, it was like, oh my God, I haven't got my phone, you know, or my phone's dead. You don't get it now. And that's the other nice thing is that, I mean, I sort of think of the watch now as my emergency phone, because it will last all day anyway. And I'll still go to bed with sort of 60% left on the battery. But now I don't worry about the fact that my phone might be down to 2% if I'm out or something. I mean, it's rarely like that now anyway with the Plus. But just if it was, it wouldn't bother me, because it's like, well, if the phone dies, I've still got a way to contact people and I've still got a way to be contacted, you know, while I get to a charging point or whatever. So it just takes away that worry as well, which is quite nice.
That's
I like
good.
It. How long we got? Can we talk about Alexa stuff quickly?
Yeah, go for it. Just before you do, because I mean,
yeah,
kind of related, but I'm sure you saw the Sonos One, which is basically a Sonos HomePod-like thing, but it has Alexa in it, which is weird. I wasn't expecting that. So a weird announcement. Reviews and stuff have started coming out about that, which is interesting. I have no interest in it at all, because I, as we've discussed at length, have no interest in a speaker that talks to me, because I don't need it, because I have an Apple Watch. But it is interesting that they're doing it. But at the same time, they also announced, much more interestingly in my opinion, that all of the pre-existing Sonos are getting AirPlay 2, just as a software update next year, which is really nice. And the Sonos app got updated recently as well, and it looks way nicer, way, way nicer. Really nice visual overhaul. But it's nice that it's going to get all the AirPlay 2 stuff, because it's very rare that I need to send audio to a speaker, because it's, I just use the Sonos app. But sometimes it would be nice to have the option, normally when other people come over and I don't want them to have to download the Sonos app or connect to our Wi-Fi network and all that. So it's really nice that they're getting it, but also that it isn't a hardware thing, it's just a free software update. So that's coming next year, apparently.
Yeah, that's nice. I mean, it's good to know that AirPlay 2 is pretty much software. It's not any hardware that needs to be updated, because that means they should be able to put that in other devices.
Yeah, I was expecting it to be like HomeKit and be, you know, oh, it needs to go through certification.
Exactly.
And a special thing and got a special chip and all that nonsense, but apparently not.
That's nice. And so it's got, I don't want to say the name, Amazon's Dingus is built in, so it just behaves like an Echo.
Yeah, so that's the Sonos One. It's just a little Alexa device, little Echo.
Yeah.
But with Amazon nicer seems to... speaker, I guess. I guess it's trying to position itself as like the opposite of the HomePod. I don't think the speaker is as good as the HomePod, or got the same tech, and it's got Alexa rather than Siri. But that's definitely what they're trying to position it as. And I think it's £200, maybe slightly less, 180, something like that. I looked at it and I was like, oh, that's interesting. And then deleted it because I have no interest in buying one at all. Yeah. But it is interesting that they're going down that route, and that Amazon are opening up Alexa to be included in lots of other devices. They're obviously trying to get it in as many places as possible, which is a smart move, because then as it improves, they can, you know, you have a huge source to draw from for doing all the machine learning if everyone's using it.
Exactly.
Whereas Siri is doing that in a slightly different way, and it's available on all Apple platforms now. But it is interesting to see them allowing it to be used in other devices. I mean, obviously Siri would never ever be included in someone else's product, so it's a real difference in opinion.
Yeah, I mean I don't want to say it again. The Echo stuff's quite interesting, because they just seem to be randomly creating lots of different products and seeing what sticks. You know, throwing it on the wall, see what sticks.
Yeah, it really is.
So we've got the Echo. You've got the Echo 2, effectively, which is the smaller Echo, with almost like a cloth type, finish, a bit like the HomePod. Looks a bit squattier. It's got much better sound and everything. So, you know, that's the sort of proper successor, if you like. But then they've done this confusing one called the Echo Plus, which is the same size as the current Echo, the tall Echo, and it has better sound. I'm not sure if the sound is as good as the Echo 2. It might be, but I think it's definitely got better bass and better sound and better mics. So it might be almost the same in terms of sound quality. But they've got this, the Plus feature is that they've added the Zigbee hub. So Zigbee is the standard that's used with Hue and other solutions, and I've got Hue lights here, but then I've also got a Zigbee controller, which is used in the TARDIS to do the strip lights in there. So it appears in the Hue app as a Hue light, but it is actually a Zigbee light. So I was confused and trying to understand this, and I ended up talking to the guys involved in Alexa on Amazon in Amazon on Twitter, and I've hopefully made contact with them and might be on a podcast with them to talk about the setup that I've got here. Because they're interested in all the different things I've got running through Alexa. And so I was talking to them, and it seems basically, so the Plus, the main thing about the Plus basically wouldn't appeal to me. And if you've got Hue lights, wouldn't appeal to you if you were thinking of getting one, because you've already got the Hue lights. So you've already got the Hue bridge. So it's literally designed for people who don't have a Hue bridge, but they want to use Hue lighting. And it comes with a Hue light, which is a clever little sort of spin. So when you buy it, you get a free Hue light. And basically it acts as the Hue bridge. So you don't need the bridge itself, and it will communicate directly with the lights, which I'm guessing means you'll probably get slightly faster response time, because it's going, you know, as you say the words, it's literally going directly to the light bulbs, rather than going to the Hue bridge, to the light bulbs or whatever. Having said that, I've installed the, didn't realize there was a Hue skill now, because I had my Hue lights set up as smart devices using Alexa, which would go, it would go off to the bridge. But now with the Hue recipe skill, it now can give you many more features. So you can actually now ask it, you can say to Alexa, change the colors, do different scenes and do all the things that you couldn't do before. You know, you could do on and off and you could do brightness and you could group things into rooms, but it gives you a lot more capability now and it's really fast. So quite pleased with that. And then the other stuff they've done is the spot isn't available till next year over here. The spot looked interesting and was probably the one that I would have been interested to get for the kids. So the spot looks, it actually reminds me of the Nest thermostat. It almost looks like a Nest thermostat. And if you imagine like a little alarm clock, you know, slightly vertical. Yeah. So the idea is it's almost like a little clock that you have. And I think it's designed a bit like, remember what they did with the Nano when they had it as a, it would default to be a watch. And then when you tap the screen or turned it on and then people wrapped it in those watch straps. Yeah. I had one of those watch straps. Yeah. It was great. And
horrible,
I saw some photos.
Strap.
So it's a bit like that, but it's got the video capabilities. You could do video calls inside and out of the home. It's obviously got the screen for feedback and things like that, but it probably blends more easily in the house. So I think the sound wise, it probably sounds like a dot. But I don't know what the price will be, because the Echo 2 is only like 80 quid or something. It's pretty cheap. The Echo Plus is a bit more. So the dot, I can imagine the spot being like 50 quid and the dot almost being like 25 or 30 quid or something if they keep it going. And then the other one they've done is the Echo Show, which is the one with the screen, which I'm still, you know, not totally convinced of, but I've ordered two. they did a two pack with 100 quid off if you bought two, which is quite cool. So I'm going to have one in the office and I'm going to have one in the kitchen. And I am considering, and I'm probably going to regret it, because once the kids found out about the new calling features and drop-in features, it's become a nightmare. I am thinking of getting one for the kids' rooms, or at least two rooms, because I just love that concept of it being like the Star Trek intercom, where I can say, you know, call Leo's room, and it suddenly pops up and there's his face and you're talking, whatever. I just love that idea. I actually love the idea of mounting them next to the light switch, you know, like at the door, like so in Star Trek when they were sort of, they'd walk up and do the communicator
stuff.
That's
what I imagined when you were saying about the one that looks a bit like a Nest.
Yeah, that would be awesome. And if those were available, I would definitely have got those to replace the dots in the kids' rooms, because I think that would be really cool. But they're not going to be till next year. So I might stick around with the two shows, and then wait for the spots, but I'll see. Because they look quite cool. For that's my main use case. You know, I want a usable house intercom system. And with the new calling stuff, they've almost cracked it. They've almost done that. I mean, the sound quality is amazing. So you can literally be on the other side of a room and have a conversation and it sounds, the other person can be 10 feet away from the Echo and still sounds like they're standing right next to it. So that's really cool. The only issue with it, there are two issues. The setup process is a bit convoluted. But basically when you're doing it's designed by people who don't think about the fact that you might have more than one Echo in a house. Yeah. So they've designed it and all the adverts show the person in their kitchen with their Echo and they go phone mum and it phones mum and they're talking to mum or on the show they're talking and doing video, whatever. And they're not, you know, they're using hands free because they're cooking and they've got stuff all over their hands and it's a great little use case. But the problem is if you say, so-and-so dingus call Leo's room, his echo will sound saying there's a call, but it says call from home. It's got no concept of the fact that the call came from the office or the call came from the kitchen.
I see. Yeah.
And it's got to be a simple thing to implement. It's not as if they all ring. It is just the one that rings, but it would be cool if it said call from the kitchen or call from the sitting room or call from the bedroom, you know.
So they've almost got it. I remember there was like a bit of an outcry when they added that thing where you can ring someone and it automatically answers and they showed like
the
a grandma in. Or something. Yeah.
Drop in, yeah.
I was wondering if you tried that with like as a baby monitor. Like you've got a baby now, haven't you?
Yeah.
You already have baby monitors and all that shit anyway, but I'm wondering if this would be a cheaper alternative, because baby monitors are horrendously expensive and they're shit from what I understand.
Yeah.
Like when I've, you know, as a casual interest, just seen them in Toys R Us or something, it's like, Jesus, these are expensive. My God,
yeah, they all work on shitty, you know, wireless signals that are not high quality and, you know,
low
radio type.
Resolution plastic exactly. and all that nonsense.
So yeah, so the setup that we've got the Foscam set up in the house, and with the Foscams you can obviously look into a room or look into a location and turn the sound on and then listen. The sound quality's not bad, but it's a bit shit. It's very tinny.
Like a drop cam or a canary sort of thing.
Yeah, so Hannah's used that sometimes as a means to monitor if there's any crying going on, but the one that's in the bedroom is sort of looking out over the road or looking out over the garden. So it's a distance away from where the baby is. So the echo would be much clearer. And if we move the echo to be sort of on the bedside table or whatever, then it would be crystal clear. But yeah, I mean, that would definitely work. So the way drop-in works is that you can configure it. So you can, first of all, it's off by default for all your contacts, obviously. And then you can choose to let external contacts turn stuff on, to turn it on for those. But in the house, once you've enabled it, you can literally just say, yeah, drop into the sitting room. And it's quite nice. You get like a little beep to say it's on, the call, the light changes, there's a beep. For the one on the other end, and the light changes, and then the sound is crystal clear, really, really nice. So now sort of getting rounding the kids up for bath time or whatever, or for food, is just really simple. I can just say, and because of the quality of the speakers, even on the dots, I can just connect to one room and they can still hear me if they're in the room next door. And then walk around. It's quite nice. So yeah, I mean,
I love this idea of you being like Big Brother, just sitting there being like, drop in and just, kids, get in the bath. I see what you're doing.
I know, it's hysterical. You hear like a footstep upstairs, you can quickly connect and to the Foscams and see what's going on, and it's like, get in bed. But yeah, that's pretty cool. There's a couple of things there, though. There's a couple of other things. So there's that issue of this if they could make it a better inter room or inter house intercom, that would be really cool. The second thing is when it comes to contacts. So I have the Alexa app. My wife has the Alexa app. She's in my family through Amazon, which means she gets, you know, all of a sudden all my Kindle books appeared. Luckily, there was nothing weird in there. All my Kindle books appeared in her Kindle and all that sort of stuff. We're suddenly sharing everything. The frustrating thing is that they still haven't cracked this multi-person capability with these devices. So, you know, the calendar that's in there is my calendar. I think you can switch profiles, but it still has this craziness with calendars and everything. So, you know, if the kids suddenly said, oh, but, you know, stick an event in for Monday at 2 p.m., then it would appear in my damn calendar. Luckily, they haven't realized that yet. So one of the things that happens is if someone sends her a message because she's in the Alexa app and she's in our household, and our household has Alexas, and so someone else who has an Alexa and has the app will see us as an available contact. You suddenly get your contact list. If you share your contact list, you suddenly see which people have got Alexas and have configured the calling system. Because when on day one, it was like one person. And then on now, I've got like 10 people that are obviously in my contact list that have got Alexas. If one of her friends wants to send her a message, then they send her a voice message or a chat message or whatever through the Alexa app or through their Alexa, because you could just say send message to Hannah Barnett, whatever. Then what happens is, I suddenly saw this light appearing on the Alexa. It was like a orange light or something. It's like, what the hell does that mean? So I did a quick search, and it says there's a message waiting. So I go, okay, what have I missed? You say, Dingus, what have I missed? Or Dingus, play messages. And of course, the messages that come up is not for me, it's for her, from a friend of hers. So I don't want to listen to it or delete anything. So you've got this privacy type weird issue. Because if the kids knew this and suddenly went, oh, what have I missed? Oh, there's a message right now. I'll play it. And now she's lost that message. The notification's gone, the indicator's gone. So that needs to be better, the way that it can, you know, ideally what that should do is if they've sent that message to her, she should almost have the option in the app to say, relay that to my app, because your app will ring as well. So if someone called our home via an Alexa, all the Alexas in the house would start ringing, and our phones, if we were out, our phone app would come up saying someone's calling.
And even more so ideally, it should use voice recognition. So when you say, hey, Dingus, what have I missed? It should go, there's nothing for you, but there are messages waiting for Hannah.
Exactly. That would be ideal. And that's got to be something they can do via software updates and things like that. So hopefully that stuff's going to come. But this it's good progress. I mean, obviously, the Echo is an experimental device still. You know, it's still being played with. They're still releasing different products. They're still testing the market. However, they've got this massive following. And I think Apple are, you know, I don't know what their plans are with HomePod, but you know, I think Alexa have got the sort of that home sort of automation thing sewn up in terms of the way it's so easy to write a bloody skill. It's so easy to integrate stuff. It's just very, very simple system to work with. it's going to be interesting to see where it goes. But I like what they're doing, and I like the stuff they're playing with. But it just needs some refining. But it's pretty cool. I'm liking them.
And, it does sound interesting. I have no need for any of that video stuff at the moment. I could see it being useful when you've got kids and stuff down the line.
Yeah.
And just. I mean, I'm still very much in the area of no one has convinced me why I need a Echo when I have an Apple Watch.
Exactly. And I guess the argument to that, or the response to that, would be that with the Echo, you've got more interoperability with other devices. You know, I can't boil the kettle for my watch. And now I know that sounds ridiculous. Why would you want to boil the kettle from your watch?
That would be true for most consumers, but not for me, because I have my HomeBridge set up, so I can do pretty much all the stuff with Skills, because I just set up my plugins for HomeKit. So I have my Wemo, for example. That's not HomeKit enabled, but I can turn my Christmas trees on and off with Siri, because I've got a server running on my iMac under the stairs. That's running its own HomeKit server, basically. So I can add loads of accessories that aren't HomeKit enabled, but control them via their APIs and stuff. So
cool.
You can't do that if you're a consumer. It's incredibly difficult, the development stuff, bits and pieces. But that's all I need at the moment, and it works. It works very well. That's the only thing I think that I would be easier.
Yeah, I mean, the nice thing that there's two nice things just to finish up on that. There's two nice things there. One nice thing they're adding, and one nice thing they have added. One thing is they finally added multi-room audio. So you can group, I think I might have mentioned this before, but you can group Alexas into upstairs, downstairs, different groups, and then you can say, you know, play music downstairs, and they all fire up. Mm. The only issue with that, it's another one of these multi-device issues, is once you've grouped the Echoes into one group, you can't put them in another, which just seems crazy. So I can't say, you know, play it in the kids' rooms, or something like that. It has to be upstairs or downstairs, or that's it, you know. Or you can't say whole house. You know, not that I want to play music in the whole house, but you can't do that because you've already put them in two groups. So that's the only issue there. But it is possible, and obviously with software they'd be able to change that. The other thing that's coming is these new routines and intelligent grouping, which sounds really cool. So this is the ability to start putting sequences of things together. So at the moment you can create scenes or you can create groups. But, you know, and it's that whole thing of, like, you know, Echo goodnight or whatever, or Echo start Christmas, you know, and your Christmas lights come on, your lights go down, the music starts, you know, it's all that sort of thing. That would be really interesting, because then I can start putting routines together for the kids to say, you know, it's kids, you know, Alexa, well, shit, Alexa, stop, Echo, it's bedtime, or Echo, it's kids' bedtime. And then, you know, the main lights would go down to like 10%, their little side lights would come on if they want to read. You know, other lights in the house would have, you know, and maybe the sitting room lights dimmed down, ready for the evening. That would be cool.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, HomeKit's always had that. You can create scenes where you can mix and match things together. But what they've done in iOS 11 is gone a step further, where now you can have things conditional. You can have triggers and stuff. So, for example, if... you've got a motion sensor in HomeKit, or a good example is I've got a humidity one in the garage, or I could have my dust sort of monitor in my office. When that gets to a certain level, it can then trigger another HomeKit device to come on. So, for example, if the dust level goes above 20% in the office, it could trigger my air purifier to come on, and when it goes below, the air purifier turns off. So you get that triggery thing. Whereas what you're talking about is more like scenes. Like, I have a we have one called Bloody Blackpool Illuminations, which turns off all the lights in the house. a few others like that, where you can do scene things. But it is that glue that sticks all these things together and does it securely that's the trick with all of this stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And with all this stuff as well, and again, this is all solvable because it's all software, and some of these recipes I use have got better. They're obviously adding in variations of recipe skills. They're adding in the variations, because when you build an Alexa skill, you can create the basic keywords and then you can do variations. And it's that stuff that has to get better, because, you know, I remember when I first used the kettle, I had to say it in a specific way. Otherwise, it thought I was trying to turn some lights on. You know, if I said turn kettle on, or instead of turn on kettle or whatever, it would just get it wrong. And it's got better. It's responding correctly this time. So there's definitely some progress there. But yeah, it is interesting. There's a coolness to it because you can do all these things, but it needs to be seamless in terms of, you know, I shouldn't have to think, oh my God, I want to turn the house heating on. What's the correct phrase I have to say? You know, it should able to cope with me, literally be able to say as I would a person, can you turn the heating on, set it to 12? It's that. And you know, the way you correct yourself sometimes, you know, because you're overthinking, you know, when you think about saying something to Siri or saying something to Echo, you might be thinking too much, and then you stumble or you stutter or you say the wrong thing, but you keep going, hoping, please, please, please understand what I meant, you know. And then she says, I don't understand what, you know, and it's like, oh, crap. Whereas a human obviously would. It's trying to get past that stuff as well. So when I say, you know, can you turn the house heating on and set it to 9, set it to 19 or 20, there should be that context to say, ah, okay, you want the house heating on and you want it set to that temperature, rather than querying the first part and saying, I don't understand what you mean because you haven't given me a temperature. It's that sort of thing. You know? And I'd love to be able to say, can you turn the heating on and set the sitting room to nighttime mode? And also put variations. I always mix up sitting room and living room. We've got it in the system as sitting room, but I typically call them living rooms.
This is so the interesting thing, is that as well. There's a real difference between the Echo and Siri here in a number of ways, but the main one is that Siri's HomeKit, I should say, Siri obviously a big part of, but HomeKit seems to be much better in that they have all of this stuff already. They have things like the scenes, the triggers, the ability to section the house into different rooms and then to group those into multiple areas. So I have upstairs, downstairs, I can say whole house, I can say just the bedrooms. All of these things are all there, and all the communication is there. But the problem is that the reason that it's so tight and works so well is because everything goes through a certification process with Apple. I mean, my stuff doesn't, because I do it all through this developer hack. But, you know, for your everyday consumer, if you've got all stuff that's certified for HomeKit, it's amazingly good and very, very well done. But that's incredibly expensive, and a lot of stuff just doesn't exist yet. Whereas the Echo is much cheaper, and it works with loads and loads and loads and loads and loads of stuff, but you have to be incredibly specific, and a lot of the stuff that you would think coming from HomeKit would be fairly basic and be there isn't. So it's a real opposite. It'd be interesting to see which one gets to the perfect solution first. I mean, Apple's trying to relax some of its HomeKit stuff a little bit. So I think if you want to develop something, it doesn't need to be certified for you to like test it and stuff. Like, you can build like your own little Raspberry Pi stuff and have it connect to it without going through a whole certification thing. But I think you still need it for a. I think maybe the hardware requirement's gone as well. There were specific hardware requirements which I think have been relaxed slightly. Right. But I think you still have to go through certification if you're going to sell a product. So if Wemo wants to add HomeKit support, I think they can retroactively to their old devices now. Like, they don't have to do a hardware change, but they still have to go through certification for all the security stuff. So it's interesting to see whether they'll get that bit sorted first and open the net to like much more devices and get it all working, or whether Alexa will improve all of their bits and get that working first, and which one's gonna end up.
Exactly.
Or, as will probably happen, they'll both become pretty much the same, but ever so slightly different.
But it's interesting. It's
interesting that they're coming from completely different sides on it, and each have their positives and negatives. I mean, I never liked HomeKit to start with, just because there is nothing. There still is nothing. But it's since I discovered that HomeKit HomeBridge code thing, it's a lot better. The bit that I want to get to is adding my Sonos speakers to it, because whilst they'll get AirPlay, they won't get HomeKit. And I think HomeKit has a concept of a speaker now, and it would be nice to be able to say things like play my music upstairs, because at the moment I have to use the Sonos app, and that's much more time consuming, because normally if I want to listen to music, I can just say, hey, whatever, play my music by Fall Out Boy or whatever, and then she just starts playing, and I can do that in the car. But I can't do it at home with my speakers. I have to open the Sonos app and manually type and search and find the stuff, and it's very time consuming and annoying. So soon I'll be able to at least search and then say, send it to my speakers over AirPlay, but then I'm still streaming it that way, and I don't want to do that either. So the holy grail for me will be able to tell it to play something through my speakers but connect it all properly. But I don't know how easy that's going to be. It's unlikely.
Yeah, it'd be nice to, I'd like to have the Apple TVs, you know, again, this is all software. It'd be great to be able to say, you know, play this or play Sky, play an app, play like Sky News or play Netflix or play play something from Netflix or play something from iTunes or whatever on the TV in the kitchen, on the Apple TV in the kitchen, so that I can just walk from the sitting room. I can say that, or even on my phone, watch or whatever, walk into the kitchen, it's already there, the TV's come on, it's playing. You know, it's silly little things like that, but what frustrates me about stuff like that is it's technically there. There's no hardware that needs to be added.
Yeah,
someone literally just needs to put that in, and it would make it amazing. You know, if you're watching something on your phone, watching something on your iPhone, YouTube, whatever, and then you just say, you know, hold down Siri and say, continue playing on the kitchen, or play it on the kitchen, and it should just do it with video and everything. That would be really cool.
I think that might work with AirPlay 2. I get the feeling that should be an AirPlay thing.
That would be very cool. Yeah, that would be very cool.
I have to say, I've been very pleased since getting the Series 3 watch, because now Siri is so much faster and she replies to you. I'll literally go downstairs, walk into the living room, turn on the living room lights, and then they come on. And it's like, oh, that's nice. That used to take 30 seconds, and sometimes it wouldn't work. So it is much, much better. Because previously you could make the argument that it would be better to have an Echo because it actually works, whereas the Apple Watch didn't half the time. But now it's caught up. It's definitely seems to be a lot more reliable than ever it was. So it's been great for that kind of stuff. But I agree.
It's nice.
It's going to be interesting to see how much better these voice assistants get, because it really does feel like that's where we should be moving towards, especially when you've got like AirPods and all that stuff. Like we said at the beginning of the show, I mean, I use it for basic searches now. It seems that every day I'm slowly using the voice stuff more and more and more. And typing less and less and less. So it'll be nice when everything works like it does in the films. I think we're still a long way from that.
Yeah, once it gets to that stage, it's going to be very cool. When you don't have to think about what you're talking to and how you're talking to it, that should be really interesting.
I'd have to put on your robot voice.
I've gotten terrible nightmare with Ixie. So Ixie's name is Ixia, Ixia. So you could call it Ixia or Ixie, and every single bloody speech device cannot understand. So the kids have got into the, because this is where Echo's quite nice with stuff that it can do. I love it for playing little nursery rhymes as you're putting the kids to bed. Just to keep them entertained, keeping the babies entertained. But also the kids have found out the story thing where you can say, tell me a story, or tell me a bedtime story. And then the recipe or whatever, skill, keep calling it recipe, will say, what's your name? And so Poppy's fine, because Poppy it gets. But if you say Ixie or Ixia, it comes up with all kinds of crazy stuff. So she's been Dixie, she's been Dixala or something. And it's like, oh my God. But yeah, they love it. And then, so they listen to this, they still do it though. So they listen to the story. And then I come in and it's like, it's the wrong name, but it was for Ixie sort of thing. But it's little things like that. Or I remember I had it with HomeKit saying, can you turn off the lights in Ixie's room? And so I actually had to name her light Pixie, because that's one of her nicknames. So I said Pixie, but then you've got to remember that. So when you go, oh, turn off Ixie's light, that doesn't work. Turn off Pixie's light, because it was the only thing it could understand. It just could not get this damn word, no matter how I tried to say it. I came up at one point with Ixie as, I think it was the I-C-K-X or something, or I-C-K-X-Y or something. It was just like, oh my God, you're doing phonetics now almost. It's interesting. The worst thing is having kids and them realizing all the things the damn thing can do. The only thing they haven't realized yet is how to buy stuff and my PIN code. Once they've worked those two things out, I'm in trouble, basically. Because I've gone into the Alexa app, I've gone into the Echo app to check the shopping list or something, and there's all kinds of, you know, My Little Pony, so-and-so something, animatronic stuff or whatever they've seen. They've been saying it to the thing to add it to shopping, and it's gone and added it to the shopping list, thinking that they're going to arrive, you know. I think that Poppy at one point said, oh, I've ordered something, it's coming. It's like, I hope you haven't. and she added the shopping list.
Nice. Brilliant. Speaking of names and voice assistants and so on, I saw a brilliant thing on Twitter earlier. You know the activity thing where it tells you to close your rings?
Oh, yes. I saw that. Stupid work. Yes.
Fuck, you're so close to closing your move ring. This 17-point walk should do it. And the guy's like, the tweet's perfect. I thought Apple was getting overly colloquial, but it turns out my 6-year-old told Siri that was my name.
It reminds me of the.
I thought it was photoshopped when I first read it. I was like, "What?" And then I read it. I was like, "Oh, I see what they've done."
Yeah, so it reminds me of the Alan. Remember the Alan Partridge thing on Day to Day when they were the goals, and the goals were getting scored, and he was doing the typical sports presenting thing of, "Oh, you know, it's another goal, fantastic!" And then finally, he was like, "Shit, did you see that?"
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, it's hilarious.
It reminds me of that. Looking at your watch, and it says, "Yeah, Christ." You're only 10 minutes away from finishing it. Like, what the hell? That's brilliant. Yeah, 6-year-old did it. Genius.
I had for a very, very long time that my watch kept calling me maybe, and I could not understand why for ages. And it's because it had incorrectly, when I asked it to play the song Call Me Maybe, it got that wrong. And then for ages it was just saying, maybe. Would you like blah, blah, blah. I was like, why does he keep saying maybe? It was really weird. It threw me for ages until I realised what I'd done. I was like,
I can't remember the bloody story now, so this is probably not going to be very interesting. But there was a thing where I think it was they changed no to yes in the abbreviations in their parents' phone. So there's a brilliant photo of this chat that's going on where the kid said something like, you know, when you guys are away next week, is it okay if I throw a party for all my friends? So they respond with yes. Brilliant, you're the best parents. I meant yes. What's going on? They keep typing.
Why can't I say yes? Yes,
I mean yes. Why is this not working? When I want to say yes, it's saying yes and stuff. Oh my God, it was absolutely brilliant. They just got a hold of their phone and went in and changed the abbreviations. I love it. The shortcuts, you know. It's awesome.
One of my friends had a TomTom. Where you could record your own voice for it. So it was only something like 20 commands. It was like, turn left, turn right, at the motorway, at the junction, at the roundabout, then like first exit, second exit. So it was like only like, I think it was about 20 or 30 different bits you had to record, and then it stitched them all together for the various bit. And I did one for him, but I switched the turn left and turn right. So every time it said turn left, you actually were supposed to turn right instead. And that was,
yeah, that's nice.
He didn't thank me for that.
That's what I used to love doing. That when my nephew came to live with us years and years ago before we had kids, when we were in London, and he was going to join, he came to work for us for about a couple of months, 3 months I think it was, to learn web and HTML stuff, because he had no skills in any of that, and he was going to join the RAF. He was about to join the RAF and is now in the RAF. And so I was terrible. I was just a complete arsehole. So I used to basically get his phone when he went to bed and then set an alarm for like 6 a.m. or whatever, but then put the phone somewhere else in the room so it wasn't where he normally would think it was. And then you suddenly hear this like beeping going off at 6 o'clock and this frantic noise coming from this room where he's trying to find the damn phone. Never got old.
The nice thing with that is that you can, it's actually one of my favourite pranks, is that you can set an alarm on a locked phone. Because if you hold the home button down to activate Siri, then you can say, set an alarm for 5 a.m. You don't have to unlock the phone to do it, so that's great. If you've got a friend like at a bar or something and they've left their phone, just set a few alarms. Hilarious,
love it.
Alright, let's call it a day with that one, and I'll catch you in a couple of weeks after. Yep. But hopefully after we've pre-ordered the iPhone X, but before it's arrived.
Yes, fingers crossed. Have a good flight and a trip.
Awesome, thank you very much. Catch you later.